Welcome to the Shake Podcast, powered by Sports Cannabis. I'm your host, Ryan Purvis. We have entered Season 7 with a whole new lineup and new guests while still taking a deep dive into all things cannabis and the representatives pushing the industry forward. The Shake Podcast explores new themes every episode within the dynamic cannabis space in Canada in effort to provide full coverage across issues and opportunities of interest to our listeners. We broadcast on a weekly basis anywhere you stream your podcast on any platform that you love or directly from Apple. It's whatever's easiest for you. Today we have a special guest, Sam Hunt. And no, not one of my favorite country artists, but even better, an absolute gem in the cannabis space. It's great to have you on the show today, Sam. How are you doing? And can you tell our listeners where you're tuning in from?
Thanks, Ryan. Right now I'm tuning in from my little slice of paradise in St. Albert, Ontario. Just up that 417, about half an hour right off the side, go to Limoges. I shouldn't be giving that much details, but yes, living in the country, not a country music star. I wish I could get away from that young man a little bit easier, but alas, it's good for breaking the ice. Thanks, Ryan, for having me on. It's certainly a fun space to be in. I'm sure you know more than most in this cannabis space. Is kind of an up and down roller coaster ride constantly. So happy to be on and shed some insight.
Yeah, and you know what? I really appreciate you jumping on today and talk about your insights about being in the cannabis space to date. Before we get into the weeds and about all things your journey in the cannabis space, give us an introduction of yourself and your professional background or education before joining the cannabis industry.
Yeah, so I was kind of bobbing and weaving through restaurants for a very large period of my, I guess, professional career. Straight out of high school, I was managing restaurants with my family, a lot of rotisserie chicken for those who know, and kind of transitioned from the hospitality space with working with a lot of startups. I kind of got this startup bug, really kind of entrepreneurial mindset with not really a lot of direction. So I was fortunate enough kind of later in my career to take some time off and explore different avenues with different startups, got into a little bit of grant writing while I was bartending in 2018. And that kind of led to, you know, that little bit of empowerment that sometimes one needs in themselves just to be able to create something from their own. So took kind of that 10 or odd years of hospitality industry expertise that I had in managing restaurants and wanted to try a new industry. Cannabis was just opening up at the time, was a pretty avid user at the time and wanted to just kind of, you know, dip my toe in the industry, see what it was going to be like. If anybody remembers like early days of cannabis legalization, the OCS was going to have like actual stores, the Ontario Cannabis Store. We were going to have just like LCBOs, everybody was going to be set up. I was actually ready for an interview. I was about to go to Toronto that weekend for like final interviews to work for the OCS because that would have been a ton of fun. And they actually decided they were flipping to e-commerce. If anybody remembers, there was a whole rigmarole there. But yeah, 3 months, I think it was about 3 or 6 months after that, they started opening up retail stores. And I saw an ad for Superette, kind of was walking by, gave the number a call, got set up. And, you know, that was kind of how it started. Yeah. Big shout out to, while I'm doing this, I have to shout out Trish Lackey, because if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't be in the industry at all. So hopefully she tunes in and gets a little bit of red cheeks for that. It was mostly just a lot of not really knowing what I was going to do. And the cannabis industry came around. It was very new. I was really, really interested in how cannabis make people feel and the different effects that you've had or that you can get from it. So it was kind of like that natural curiosity that kind of brought me into the space. And first 15 minutes on shift, I was pretty addicted to the fast pace and passion that was going into this industry at such an early time.
I'm fortunate enough to see your journey to date. And that's what I really want to get on topic about those different stepping stones to lead to where you are today. I know you just kind of touched upon what made you ultimately make the pivot, but just kind of pull it back a little bit. So today you're absolutely pushing the needle on multiple fronts and are currently a territory manager for Final Bell. For each guest that we've spoken to, there's usually a personal relationship or unique journey that's drawn them into the cannabis industry. So other than legalization, an opportunity to jump into a new space, talk to me a little bit about that passion for the plant, maybe that you had that you wanted to kind of bring to the table and bring to the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that story starts kind of 2018, maybe 2017. I had been consuming cannabis all through high school. Took kind of like, I guess this sabbatical, you could say, and jump back in, you know, around the age of 26, 27. So around, 2017, 2018, when I met my partner, Stephanie, and that was what kind of changed things. So I was probably not on the best path at this time. And one of the things we would do is we just kind of like light up a joint. At this time, smoking joints, getting back into it, gave me like a bunch of anxiety. I realized that we could, edibles were like pretty good. This was like gray market days. So edibles were just coming around and, we would just eat edibles, laugh, and just have the time of our lives sitting home, watching movies, go to the corner store, get like a bunch of candy and like whatever new soda was out that week. And it really kind of like was able to calm me down and focus me a little bit better. At this time, I was going through a really rough patch. So it was able to kind of like, put the wind behind my sail in a direction that was definitely more beneficial for myself. And in doing that, I was able to get off of, a couple of different medications for depression and things like that. So it was kind of like that natural way of getting away from, I had this big kind of, I guess there's a stigma too with that, and especially using cannabis for things like depression, anxiety is tricky, but I was very lucky that it worked very well for me. And at that point, I just got really into edibles. Was like making RSO, making gummies, anything I get my hands on to make like these large amounts of edibles because we were taking a lot of them at the time. my taste for edibles is nowhere near as much as it was as per, hash rosin edibles out now. But yeah, it was really, her and I kind of like experimenting with like a bunch of different things. And then I got really interested in more so like, how come I can eat this edible and I can feel fine, but if I smoke this cultivar, at that time I was calling it a strain or this type of weed, why I felt differently. So I just got really, really interested in that and did like a really big deep dive. And right around that was just right around how legalization came around. So like, yes, I smoked in high school and it was something that, we did as kids, but then I really like got away from the plant for a really long time doing a bunch of other silly things. And then that kind of bringing me back to the plant was like more so like that. It's weird, almost like the universe is being like, hey, come back here. I was able to slow things down. It was very beneficial for my health and my career development, being able to focus, because as I'm sure we've noticed from me talking in the last 5 minutes, I tend to trail off a little bit. So it just zoned me in a lot. And I just, after that, I was kind of hooked. I get into these phases where, and I'm sure a lot of people do, you get curious about something and then you're like, I need to know more. Yeah. And then you get all this information. Then somebody comes and says, well, terpenes don't do anything. And you're like, wait a second. Okay, now I need to research more. Yeah. And you just get caught into these little rabbit holes. And that's kind of, I got caught into those rabbit holes right at legalization. So information was becoming more readily available. And it was just like the perfect catapult in time, right, to be able to kind of continue my career and continue working for the plant.
So I can definitely relate to the passion for the curiosity. You know what? I graduated at Brock with a kinesiology degree and, didn't learn much about the ECS systems and cannabis in general. So I just kind of went down the rabbit hole as well and just seeing how it affected my mental health and how it kind of navigated around a roadblock that I was going through with hockey and everything under the sun there. I really found a personal connection, and that curiosity just kind of led me to where I am today. So let's jump into it. So, you've been a bartender, been in retail, manager operations side, and now you're territory manager. So let's start out from chapter one. Give me a brief overview, how that started.
I love how we have to start this. So Sam, be brief.
Be brief? We'll play with it from there.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I'll start with the interview, because the interview was really special to me. Like, honestly, we were at the clock tower in Westboro, was where the interviews were being held. I got there and, I didn't really know what to expect. Like, this is the cannabis industry. This is the first time. Like, do I wear like a collared shirt? Like, I don't know what to do. Anyways, wore dress shoes, like nice pants. Was like, I don't know what this, we'll see what this happens. Like, what happens? I get there. The amount of people, like just the diversity alone of the people there was really interesting to me. Like, I was like, this is something that you don't always see. There were so many people there and there was a big table of food. So me being like, okay, well, there's food here. Like, we're going to eat it. I had like an interview time. So I think my time was like 11. I got there 10 minutes early. So I like grabbed as much food as I could, yeah, like starting to eat this. I have like a little plate. There's crumbs probably on my shirt at this time. And a young lady, I can't remember her name for the love of me, came by and said, okay, who's next for budtender? And I was standing there and there was like maybe six people in the row and no one got up. And I'm like stuffing my face, like drinking water. I'm like, okay, well, I guess I go. So I actually sat down like mouthful of cookies talked to Trish, and like, I think within about 5 minutes, we were both just like, this is amazing. I can't wait to be on the team. And then she kind of like impromptu hired me on the spot. And I'll never forget it because I had like a full plate. I was like asking her if she wanted cookies. It was just something that it felt like I was talking to a friend that came by the house.
Yeah.
So that was like the moment I walked away from that was like, that was the best interview, like the coolest interview I've ever been a part of. Like all those people, the plans that they had were really cool. And like anybody who knows Superette knows that like they're pretty aggressive with their branding. Mm-hmm. So, you know, fast forward to day one, it was like walking by like 300 people in line. Like there was a lot going on in the city. I just got like 1/3 of what was really going on, right? Like we were really split in three those early days. Like you had Fire and Flower, Hobo and Superette, right? So we were kind of pigeonholed into like what our startup was like in the cannabis industry.
Right.
But yeah, that first day we go in and then they're like bordering up back walls because somebody drove a truck in the back, tried to rob us. And like, we're like, wow, like this is still the cannabis industry, but it's retail. And then first 15 minutes in, the type of people, the questions, the being constantly like bombarded with questions that made you think that you're like, oh my God, I'm going to go home and I'm going to probably spend 5 hours researching everything that somebody told me.
100%.
You're getting like everybody that's in their, you know, they're old or they're young or they're not from around. They're new to this. They've never seen cannabis, but like it was wild. Tourism was super high then. It's like, it was go, go, go. You're seeing all these people all the time. And this is something that like definitely, I don't think it happens as much now, but during that time, there was really important medical questions. Like I had talked to doctors. I had talked to people with their doctors. I talked to people who were terminally ill. I've talked to people whose pets were terminally ill, family were terminally ill. And that was a lot of weight to carry in those early days of budtending. So like anyone who's ever been a budtender in that first bit when it was crazy, like you hold a lot of weight being able to manage those types of questions because it's quite heavy on the heart. And I think a lot of people still, luckily now, like there's a little bit more education available for everybody, but there was nothing those early days. Like there was no terp sheets, like all the things that people have now accessible education wise. We didn't have any of that. It was like a group chat with like the really heady guys who were like, I saw this article. And everybody's trying to like decipher this very scientific language.
Yeah.
All while, you know, being kind of like the front lines of this new industry.
Yeah.
It was very, very interesting, very inspiring nonetheless.
It was hard and you couldn't just go, 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 or you'd be burnt out before the end of your shift. So did you guys have any strategy just to make sure that you guys managed emotions in store with your staff?
Yeah. And I mean, when I was at Superette, I really transitioned like bud tender to kind of team lead. And then it kind of went on to greener pastures after that. So wasn't sure if there was anything managerial that was there, but the team as a whole was very good at kind of like understanding that. Luckily in those days too, you'd have, you know, 13 people on shift because it was crazy. So you'd have the ability to be able to step aside, right? Where you don't really have that advantage now where you can kind of take a step back. Like for a lot of the time, there's like maybe two or three people in stores at any given time because we're so saturated. So that was like the team rallying up behind you, right? So again, I don't know if there was anything on paper there, but never felt like, you know, if you needed 5 minutes to kind of check yourself. We didn't have a name for it. We just kind of went around the corner and sat down and was like, hey, like that was a heavy one, or yeah, that was a heavy one. Like, hey, what's going on? It's crazy because like at that time people were coming in with their doctors and their doctors are asking us questions, and like there's at that time like we had CanCell and that was really the only education. Everything else was kind of fabricated education that we thought was correct. I mean, no one was talking about terpenes the day that, you know, retail stores open. That was not even on the conversation. It was, what's the cheapest stuff? That's too expensive. Why is it so dry? What's right. This spray for? I don't, you spray it in your mouth. Well, it says spray it somewhere else. Well, it works in your mouth too. There was so much going on.
Too funny. Okay. So to wrap up the let's call it the bud tender chapter or in the retail setting chapter, any kind of quick wins and losses that you kind of carried forward and you really were mindful at the time going into that next chapter?
Yeah. So wins for sure, setting up or being like the catalyst to Superette's partnership with the Ottawa Food Bank. At the time, it was one of the first kind of like local community-led initiatives with the cannabis company. Really just started with like an email and a phone call. I think that's how like everything amazing happens, is like you really just got to tell people that like, hey, I want to help you, and somebody's going to answer you back. And so basically, in essence, what we did is we started off with just a food drive, or, you know, a can drive, get out, you know, perishable or non-perishable items in the store and donate to the food bank. We had LPs jump in, you know, at that time. Shout out to Barb from Tweed. She really showed up for the food drive. You know, the early reps that days too, like, we had such great support from brands to be able to do things like that. That went very well. That kind of led into a community harvest where we took, you know, staff out as with brand reps to do community harvest. And I think we harvested, if I'm not mistaken, it was somewhere between like 500 and 600 pounds of carrots that day. And then that kind of led into them buying this broccoli crop and dedicating 60,000 cans that year to the Ottawa Food Bank. So it really grew out of, like, you know, that seed that we planted. And that was for sure a massive win that I felt.
Yeah. Kudos to you guys. I remember when that became public and jumped on socials, what you guys were doing, that really put pressure on the other retailers in town. Kudos to you and the team, Sam. You definitely kind of unlocked the door there for other retailers to be like, okay, yeah, you know what? Outreach, this is important. This is a new industry and we're not just here just to sell pot.
You know, that goes to the whole team that kept it going, right? Like, I was, as I said, I was kind of like the spark, and then they were really the oxygen that led the flame. But, you know, you mentioned it there, like, you know, unlocking that, you know, a lot more people kind of need to push those boundaries just a little bit, because we're, you know, we were hoping all these tax dollars were going to come in and we were going to be able to have these social programs and all of that. And it's just gone to like more bureaucracy and just paying licenses, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like incumbent on us to be like, hey, we need to find something we can do to move the dial, because if not, like, I don't see, you know, a government agency anytime soon being like, hey, we're going to give up half our tax dollars to, you know, focus on this initiative, let's say.
Right. So if you were to look at losses, I don't like saying losses, let's call it opportunities, something that you learned in the early days that you knew that had to change. Can you touch on anything like that before that next chapter began?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest things I learned, and like, it was funny because it was one of those like silly reels you see on Instagram, like these one kind of quote things where it's like, I'd much rather be playing the game, sitting on the bench, than be in the stands. And I was like, I'm like, I felt that so hard. And I was like, okay, you know what? I went through a lot of I worked for a lot of dispensaries, a lot of different people, because I always wanted to do something better. And the one thing I learned that was like the biggest growth moment for me is like, you have to be a little bit more malleable with the tools that you have. So, like, you know, to that point, getting things started with the Ottawa Food Bank, like, for sure, I was like, hey, you guys should do this, you guys should do this, you guys should do this. And then I was like, wait a second, why am I getting upset that somebody else isn't accomplishing something that's my vision? So I just got him, like, wrote an email, picked up the phone, and that was like how that happened. Then I started to get like, okay, worked with Tokyo Smoke, you know, not to throw anybody on the bus, but like, that was a very corporate style of managing, like a corporate style of managing a retail location and being in cannabis culture. And I just didn't vibe with that. That wasn't my vibe. Then I went over to another store. That wasn't it. And I realized afterwards, looking back, that I could have accomplished all of those things had I just stayed in one spot. Like, the grass isn't greener on the other side. It took me a lot of, you know, quitting my job, getting another one to realize that.
It's interesting, you know, that you say that, Sam, just to kind of jump in here, because there's a lot of news about, you know what, there's a huge turnover in bud tenders right now. But you know what, thinking about it, that's just retail 101. Do you think that really does have to do with that mentality of like the entrepreneur inside of all these bud tenders, the excitement, the passion? And if they see their operator, employer just not performing, they say, you know what, someone else is going to be first of the punch bowl, let's just say.
Yeah, well, I mean, you never flag somebody because they're trying to, you know, make more money. Like, if somebody's the turnover is usually because somebody sees this experienced skill set and they want to use that in maybe a higher managerial position. New stores are opening up all the time. So the trajectory to go from bud tender to store manager is like pretty fast in this industry particularly. But I think the reason you see such a high turnover is like, cannabis is culture, and each retailer you're at is going to have a different culture, like it's vastly different culture, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't align with those, like, if I could go back, I would have asked a million more questions in the interviews. You know, what are your plans for this? What are your plans for that? And if they didn't have those, I wouldn't have kind of did that. Oh, well, I'll just take it because I need it. You know what I mean? Like, if you have that opportunity to give yourself a little bit more time in your interviews is great. But ultimately, I think it's just meshing with the culture. You have to find the people that you're willing to be able to grow in this industry with, because it's hard. And if the people you're working with don't have your back, or you don't feel like you're a part of a team, probably a good time to move over. But once you get that team mentality, it doesn't matter all the other stuff you can create with the team. Everything else you can create with the team. You have enough time to be able to create something. Just go and create it. Fail a million times. That's fine. I failed plenty of times. I can talk about them all day long. So when you talk about like being part of that team, like, are you going to a retail store where you're the only person in that store? Can you, like, I personally cannot be in a room alone by myself. I'll go crazy. I talk too much. I like need to be, you know, spread the wings, all that kind of fun stuff. But like, if that's something that you can do, then that's the store that's going to work for you, right? Like it's trickier now because you don't get the feeling of a team as much because there's much less people in store. And I imagine that's going to change. Like, you know, the industry will correct itself, both retail and LP wise. We'll see a lot of change and mix up, but you know, this industry is not for the faint of heart at all. So, you know, find people that make it worth being in. Like, I'm lucky enough to have probably, well, maybe not lucky, but all my friends work in cannabis. So like, if I leave, I feel like I'm like the outsider now, you know, and people, you know, this is it's fast. Like, people talk about it being dog years. Like, until you're in it, it's dog years. Like, you know, we want everything yesterday and it's coming in 6 months. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, it's, you know, it's a patient game right now. And it's, I think it really comes down to the people that are able to control their energy. You know, I speak a lot about this on Instagram, how important it is to protect that energy and focus on those goals, focus on that long-term, right? But sometimes we get caught up in those emotions, the passion, you know, at the, why the hell isn't this happening today? You know, and it's not happening for another year's cough, cough, the changes.
Yeah, well, we forget that there's humans. Like, the person on the other side of that email is a human. The person on the other side is a phone.
That's it.
Is a human. You know, I thought that the one thing that came out of the pandemic is like, we were a lot more connected to each other, like as humanity.
Yes.
Like, ah, yeah, shit doesn't work out. Oh, I'm not going to get that on time. Like, we're plagued by progress, right? And I think that that's like the thing where we want everything to be better today, instead of just finding like the little ways to like inch it forward. Cause that's, we don't want to burn ourselves out. As you mentioned, there's so much burnout in this industry.
100%. You're seeing a lot of people jump off the map here and just say, maybe I'll come back to this industry later on, or maybe just this isn't for me.
Today, athletes around the world are using their platforms to normalize the sports cannabis conversation and to break the stigma. Stay up to date with the latest in sports cannabis news and learn more about athletes leading the charge on www.sportscannabis.ca. The trend towards normalizing cannabis is not specific to one country. Join the movement and let's grow the community together.
Let's keep this moving here. I really appreciate your budtender insights and, you know, what that kind of step ladder you took in retail. I know you've been to a couple employers now, and you recently jumped into a new position over at Final Bell as a territory manager. Something that I just want to throw at you real quick is something that I saw on your website, which I found was super interesting, because when you guys came to market, I felt like you guys were kind of doing something different. On the website, it says, we are changing the way the cannabis industry operates.
Yeah, I mean, you know, fairly new in the position, and I you know, don't want to give out any names or any trade secrets, but, you know, being with Final Bell again, like before they had Seven was our first brand that we brought to market. Before that, just a lot of manufacturing and implementation of vape carts, design, hardware, childproof packaging. They really had a unique foothold in an industry that was growing and being able to kind of scale up as the industry continued to grow. I think that the best way to sum it up in short is that Final Bell has that full like end to end of the supply chain management. So if you're coming there and you make extracts, we have hardware, packaging, all of that, sales distribution, we can do all that. If you come to us and you have a brand, we can find product. Like it's very kind of plug and play. And the brands that we have brought into the sales team, like the brands that I have under my portfolio, we have, you know, 100% indigenous owned and operated brands with Seven and Sovereign. We have legacy to legal brands, Sherbinski's coming out of San Francisco, Fleur, Blessed, Little Pharma, Gallery Brands, as well as Burr Blanc. Like we were just, the movability between the portfolio seemed really interesting to me, because it was brands that they're just not just selling cannabis to sell cannabis. You know, there's a little bit of a story behind that. Every single one of the brands, I won't kind of pitch and take up the time to kind of brand pitch on the podcast, but that's the unique bit, is they have so many different ways to play in an ever-changing industry. that I kind of feel like I'm a part of, like Sleeping Giant, to say the least, because we are fairly new. You know, I think we're just coming around a year being in the cannabis space in Canada. And that, to me, I think is how they're changing the way the cannabis industry operates, because, you know, one, we can kind of plug and play in with brands or with different cultivators, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we have sales and distribution. That's kind of what I'm a part of with being a territory manager in Southeastern Ontario. And the brands that we represent really have such authentic brand stories that you maybe don't always see. There's a lot of marketing. There's a lot of, you know, smoke, mirrors, glitter, pins, stickers, you know, but there's not really a lot of substance behind a lot of brands. And I think that's the one thing that was super unique, at least me kind of joining this team, because there was some other offers on the table, really kind of drew me in and was like, this is somewhere I can definitely grow. Because, like, as we know of Sam's career so far, he tends to move around a lot, but I do, you know, feel very much at home with this team. They were amazing when my son was born, and it's been great to see this side of the industry and kind of continue to lead into that curiosity that we have, right? There's so much curiosity out there.
Yeah, you know, it is important to have a brand, have a story, you know, and you've seen a lot of unique brands and marketing to play in. That does stick. That does plant a seed. Yeah. And as a bud tender.
And as that, like, just one point, I hate to cut you off. It was every brand that came out after those initial brands was high THC, low cost, right. High THC, low cost, no right. bullshit weed. Like those types of mantras that we just kept spewing out. And we were like, wait a second, it's all the same.
Yeah.
It's all the same brand kind of mantra or whatever you would put underneath it, like these taglines of like high THC, high THC. And now we've seen this massive change in market trend of like, well, we need the highest THC then. Like, shit.
And now, you know, people are starting to develop a little bit of brand loyalty. And brand loyalty, you know what, not only begins with a relationship of your bud tenders talking about the product and the brand, but, you know, like the actual story itself. And when someone can kind of relate, you know, it really just simply connect with that story, like that does affect the purchase. It affects the high. But I want to transition this conversation. Like, I want to talk about Spark in the Park. Spark in the Park, Ottawa, you know, it's pretty low key event, but fairly. Well,
it seemed low key until everybody started showing up. I can't give enough credit to Richard Bryan at Decibel and Alexandria at Hybrid Brands, because they approached me. They said they had this idea. I was super for it. I think, like, again, this goes to like being in the industry a really long time and being like, I want to push boundaries. I'm happy to push a boundary with anybody if we're like committed to, you know, really getting out there for the community. At the end of the day, you know, the culture is kind of what kept me in this industry. It's what kind of fuels every day. So anytime I can play into that, I'm going to for sure. But really, you know, they came out, they had this idea. They had a lot of like the branding, they took care of all of that kind of stuff. And really it was more so about, you know, how can we make this the most effective just time to relax? You know, so often we're plagued with this term ROI, and it's like, we just need to see, okay, if I spend this many dollars, I need this many dollars back. And you can't really quantify everything with dollars. And I think Spark in the Park was a great example of that. Like, I think throughout the day, we probably saw about 150 or so people in downtown Ottawa, Strathcona Park, which was crazy, because this is Ottawa we're talking. We're not talking about like a Toronto event. They have enough events.
And when we say people, like, we say bud tenders, maybe 90, 95, maybe some partners there, maybe,
you know,
a couple
we had people
friends,
flying from, like, Vancouver. We had people from Vancouver. We had people from Toronto coming in, because like we had set kind of like this wave in motion of like, yeah, you know what? We're going to have a timeout and we're going to connect. And like the real goal is networking at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So we made it kind of brand agnostic. Yeah. There was no branding out there. You know, we had a ton of water, which everybody drank. Like, I think we went home with 2 bottles of water, like 100 bottles of water got drank. you know, we had like gum for pasties. So we had it all figured out. Rich brought cornhole. Alex had a whole bunch of games, and it really took off, because I think everybody just wanted to connect.
Yeah.
And if what industry's taught me anything, like, we're so young, your network, like, we all know each other, really. You know, 6 degrees of separation, cannabis industry's got to be like 2. you know what I mean? Everybody knows each other, and you never know when you're going to connect with somebody, and that's going to be the spark that comes up with this next big idea and this next big idea. And it just kind of grows from there. Like, truth be told, I would have probably very little success in this industry if it wasn't for the people that propped me up, you know, during those low times. Like Angelo from Hybrid Farm, he was running one plant when I just lost my job. Like, he propped me up, got me back into the industry. You know, Ryan Pinsky at Tama Extracts has been an absolute asset for me and great friend who's been able to big me up when I'm feeling low. Like, you got to have those people, and you meet those people at these kinds of events, because it's not about go to the event, get something, bring it back, more money. You know, it was totally brand new. Everybody came out. We had blankets out. Everybody was smoking, having a time. Regulations were tricky because we live in the city of Ottawa. But other than that, like, again, great event. And to jump into regulations.
Yeah, no. Pause that for a second before we jump in, because I was at Spark in the Park. I just thought it was something special because, you know what, I've been to other events or festivals. Well, not festivals yet, but other events. And you know what, you get a little bit of that corporate vibe. And you know, I'm the kind of guy that, you know what, I love to kind of shoot the shit, but like, I'm not going to go overly out of my way to speak to anyone. I just want to, you know, just do my thing. And if I meet a couple new faces, great. If I don't, I'll hopefully meet them next time, kind of thing. But when I got there, I felt very at home. You know, it felt organic, felt natural, got to see some friendly faces that I get to see on roughly a monthly occasion, kind of thing. But then I also made a handful of new friends. But it makes me think, I'm like, why isn't there more of these natural kind of meetups or get togethers? Why can't, you know, these events and soon to be festivals, you know, really kind of directed to that kind of organic relationship network kind of self? But let's just hear how you kind of pulled it off.
Yeah. So, I mean, in Ottawa, advice to everyone, check your bylaws, because apparently there's a lot of bylaws in this city. But yeah, I mean, we picked Strathcona Park. Obviously, there were some hangups because in Ottawa, you can't legally smoke in a park. So there's a couple of little nuances that we kind of played against. There was a small path that we were really lucky of that actually didn't have kind of the zoning for the park per se. So we just had everybody kind of consuming along there. To that point, you know, I think the major success of that, like of any event, is just like people coming out, right? And we just really, everybody showed up for each other, which was great. You know, we obviously had our legal teams at all the companies we work for take a look at it. You know, we had a couple of questions get posed. We did like an FAQ. We did our research. Unfortunately, we slipped up a little bit because the actual area we selected day of to have kind of the event and everything was apparently the only place in Strathcona Park where you can't have dogs. So that was
wild
on the failure chart.
Do you want to touch upon how, like, what went down there and that five minutes of panic?
So after everyone kind of being like him and hawing about like, you can't smoke in a park, how'd they figure it out? And we're like, it's a path, which wasn't a good enough answer. Anyways, moral of the story being, where that park's located is right across from embassies. So there was RCMP up and down because there was quite a bit of people there. Bylaws showed up, turned their lights on. They're very scary lights. And everyone kind of hemmed and hawed and like stared at it. And I voted as the one, like, as you said, you know, Alex and Rich did most of the work. So I'm like, at least I can vote myself for tribute to deal with the authorities. So they turn the lights on. Everyone's looking. I'm like, damn, I'm going to have to go talk to these bylaw. They're probably, you know, worried that we're doing something wrong. So I like walk up to the car, they come out, they like do a circle. So they like started walking away from me and I was like, ah, damn, I gotta go catch them. So we went around the circle, and you know, they came through. I was wearing like a tie dye shirt and like a big weed bucket hat too. So I was just, you know, right the part. anyway, so, you know, they came through and they were kind of looking around and I went up and I was like, hey, like, you know, is there anything I can help you guys with? You know, we helped organize this little get together. Notice that you put the lights on and kind of been walking around, you know, is there anything we can do for you? And he goes, I don't know what's going on here. And I was like, oh, we're just people getting together. Like, we work in the same industry. You know, we wanted to get together, have a time, you know, pandemic's been tough. And he's like, okay, so what's going on? And I was like, we're just a bunch of people getting together. And they just seemed very confused. And they're very young. Like, I'm not a very intimidating guy, but I felt like I was being intimidating and it was weird. Anyways, his name was Ryan, just by chance. He kind of introduced myself. I said, look, my name's Sam. You know, if there's anything that we can do to make sure that you guys have what you need, like, we'll take care of that. You know, he gave me his name. I gave my business card, which in hindsight was probably not a great idea. I was like, just if you just message that number, I'll take care of it. And they were like, well, there is something. And I was like, oh, what is it? And he points at the dog and I'm like, what? And he's like, you can't have dogs here. And I was like, there's dogs all over this park. He's like, yes, this area here is you can't have any dogs. And I was like, you gotta be kidding me. And I did it so quickly. I just turned around and told Tita from right again, like, you gotta move your dog. Can't be here. I didn't have any remorse until after I did it. And I was like, oh, I told everybody with their dogs, they had to leave. But it was just that one area we were in couldn't have dogs. So that's where we slipped up on our first park in the park.
Yeah, big slip up big, there, Sam.
No dogs allowed.
No dogs.
And it did really affect kind of the overall, right? Like everybody was playing with dogs. Dogs were happy. I looked at his face and he didn't seem happy about it either, but we did what we had to do just so we could kind of carry on with the event.
Too funny.
Story nonetheless.
Yeah, yeah. So note, check your bylaws, people. Check your bylaws.
Local bylaws. You never know.
Oh, don't that's wicked.
Oranges and bathtubs in Florida or whatever. Is that still a thing? I don't know.
You're going to be telling that story for a minute here. It's nice to, capture those moments in the early days, being able to kind of pass those stories on for later on once the market kind of matures a little bit. But no, I appreciate you sharing that, Sam. So let's get into a little bit bigger than the Spark in the Park. You know, 100, 150, you know, is great turnout, good vibes, but let's talk hundreds, if not thousands. So with the upcoming kind of changes, finger crossed, / the changes that are going on over in Alberta, lounges. I know it's a huge topic these days over in Ontario when they're going to come, but like, why are we pushing for it so hard? Let's hear it.
Well, I don't think I want to be very careful how I answer this question, because I don't think that it's that we're pushing super hard for it. We really just like would like a place to consume safely. Like at the end of the day, it would be nice. Like, you know, I have a newborn son, so I don't smoke inside anymore. It would be nice to like meet up with the guys, have kind of like a bar like experience. There's music, there's maybe the game on or something else, and be able to, you know, consume a cannabis beverage, smoke a vape. I understand like the combustion, the smoke is kind of the issue too, with like a lot of bylaws already against smoking. But I think a lot of it's just like the industry does this kind of thing where we kind of shove this like, oh, it stops stigmatizing it down people's throats. And we're forgetful that like, there's just like this generation who's really not used to this. And we just got to be a little bit more careful on like how we massage that idea. Like there's a lot of times that I've gone to events and smoked inside. A lot of the time, like no one's going to be like, oh, they smoked inside. Like no one's calling the cops or the ADCO and be like, they smoked inside. So it's really just like these small little cultural events or like cultural pop-ups, as it were, where people are getting together and smoking inside and everything seems to be fine. Yeah. Where I think lounges are and people are pushing for it is like retail business is getting scarce. People want another stream of revenue. If people start opening all these lounges to only make money, we are going to have a problem, because how are you going to make money at the lounge? You're either selling cannabis or you're selling the idea of like being able to be in the place or sell games or whatever, tickets, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So it's a tricky way to like where the money's going to come from, mm-hmm, to be able to operate these lounges. And I think the people who are doing it again for the money are going to have a really hard time, because they're going to be trying to find how to maximize profit.
Yeah.
Or the people that are just like, look, I own a shop. I just happen to own the property next door. I just want to be able to smoke with my friends.
Right. I like how you touch on that. Like, it's so true. Like the whole smoking aspect on everything, like that is kind of a curveball here because of the, you know, Ontario Smoke Free Act. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see how the indoor lounges go.
Progression is going to get us there.
That's it.
The funny thing is like, I also don't think that a lot of people actually stigmatize cannabis as much as they do the smell. I can be high as hell off of edibles and stuff that doesn't smell. As long as the person next to me isn't like, ew, stinky, they don't care. They don't know.
Right.
Like no one's walking around the festival going like, that person's high. Oh my God, how dare they?
Right.
You know what I mean? But they smell it. They're like, oh, it smells skunk. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where like I think as far as consumption lounges, I think you'll see like, you know, vaping, edibles, beverages be accepted a little bit quicker. Mm-hmm. As far as smoking, like I think it's just an unfortunate fact that that's just going to be a tricky subject to deal with because of, you know, the aforementioned Smoke Free Ontario Act.
Yeah.
But in that same bit, there should be a way, and not even from advertising perspective, because like obviously, you know, Boots and Hearts and Calgary Stampede, there's a like immense amount of money to be made ad-wise alcohol all day long. taking that away, you know, having a section like the smoking section where you can smoke cigarettes, being that just opening up to cannabis is like that step forward. And I think just more people need to be wanting to have these events. Like if there's one thing that we've kind of learned is if we just keep doing things and eventually the government's like, okay, well, we can make a license around that, then they're going to do it. Like
100%.
You know, eventually they're going to be like, well, they're smoking inside anyways. Like, let's just tell them they need a license, charge them $1,000 and let's go with it.
Yeah, 100%. You know?
And it's kind of a negative way to look at it, but
it's reality.
I really feel like you just keep pushing boundaries and the boundaries will eventually start to widen up, swell, eventually snap, because the will of the people is just having out. Like, you know, we'll see.
You know,
it is a good question.
It is really nice talking about, like, you know, the events, the festival, the lounges to come. I know at the end of the day, it's inevitable, but it's just kind of a patient game and let the regulators kind of unroll itself out. But I really just like talking about it because I really think that's where the potential is on cannabis once it goes mainstream. So it gets me super excited. So looking back, talk to us about either a piece of technology, a book, or a moment that changed your life and possibly made you who you are today.
Oh, wow. Just the hard-hitting questions for the last, like, put me on the spot. There's been so many little moments. Like I mentioned that video that I was like, that stupid reel thing, that like motivation best or whatever. I'm sure that just came across my screen. But that, you know, that like I'd much rather be playing the game than sitting in the stands. Like that was a big one because I'm a very passive individual and that got me a little bit more focused.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as books, this is so funny. It's Ray Dalio's Work and Life, Principles for Work and Life. That was the one that was like, I was traveling around that time. I think I went to Cuba and I like read it the whole time I was in Cuba and came back and finished it. I was like, this was something that was so good. And just being able to like dial in of like, what are your principles and what are the things you're not going to waver on? I misinterpreted that originally. I originally was like, this is passion. I'm going to leave this job. They're not doing it right. I'm going to leave there. But that wasn't, I took the wrong meaning of all of those things. You know, passion, having principles, all of that, you can find a way to work with other people. So that was the one that kind of focused me in, drove me down and like got me so ready to pick up the phone and kind of make that next step in my career.
Mm-hmm.
I think that one was like the first one that I read that really kind of changed my way of thinking.
It's interesting that you can kind of look back over time and say to yourself, wow, I had a totally different perspective on this. Let's adjust here and look at it this way. Where can our listeners connect with you? And are there any final words for the Shake podcast?
Oh, so many great questions. I love this. you can find me on Instagram at sam.bythegram. Formerly Uncle Sam Canna. I was doing reviews back in the day. Feel free to hit me up there anytime. Or if you're in the city of Ottawa, all the way up to North Bay, down to Kingston, you probably see me stopping at your local dispensary representing Final Bell. Final words of encouragement, honestly, that just, I always, that it's better to be playing the game than to be sitting in the stands. Like that's to me, that's probably the biggest quote of the day. You know, I was very much the guy that was like, pass the ball, pass the puck. I didn't want to be that guy. It's a lot better to be that guy and miss. Because like, if you keep missing, you're going to hit it at least once.
Love that, Sam. Love that. All right. Thank you, Sam, for joining another episode on the Shake podcast powered by Sports Cannabis. I'm your host, Ryan Purvis. Tune in next week for another wicked episode on the Shake. And make sure to subscribe to our channel to stay up to date with new interviews. Thank you for streaming. And we hope you have a wonderful green week.